I am. Glad to be up here. Talk to you. For something that gets on my nerves this much, normally that isn't usually the case, that I'm glad to do that. But I am. This is an experience that I enjoy in some weird sort of way. But anyway, I'm glad to be here. And I have read a new book. Well, actually, I listened to a new book. It was on CD, 7 hours, 15 pages of notes, and I skipped one of the CDs because it was kind of boring. And I have half an hour to try and squeeze that in. And I also don't want to really talk terribly much about the book. I just want to talk about the idea in the book. And I think it goes very well with what Wednesday night we ended up, John Morris was talking about zeal, and we always go back and forth, zeal and knowledge, you know, back and forth about that. And then we're always talking about temptation and faithfulness. And in class this morning we talked about it, and I just see this principle through so many things, and I'm hoping that I can get that across to you. What I want to start with is your brain is not of one mind. And this is kind of a comfort to me. Your brain, picture your brain as the rider and the elephant, okay? I used to think there was some kind of an alien possessed in my mind because I was always kind of doing things that, like, where did that come from, you know? You know, normally, you know, I act better than that, and, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, this is a book called The Switch, and I would recommend you read it. It's a book about why change is hard, and it's about the I don't know how you classify it, but it's interesting. And anyway, the best analogy they had for the human brain is the rider and the elephant. And these are the three things I want you to remember. You got to direct the rider, you have to motivate the elephant, and then you have to shape the path. I was a little nervous, and I don't write that clearly anyway. But anyway. The elephant. I'll start with the elephant. The elephant likes to follow the old road. It likes ruts and going in the defined path. And it's a bit skittish, and it's short-term in thinking. But the elephant is also where the energy comes from. That's where love comes from. That's where compassion comes from. And that's how you get things done, is the elephant. You know, think of the elephant as a big workhorse. The rider is a long-term plan. He is an analyst. And the term I like to use is a navel gazer, which also means he likes to spin his wheels. And the rider has self-control and can force the elephant, but not for long. The elephant will overpower the rider. And if the rider is unsure of the direction, doesn't have a clear idea of where they're going, he tends to drive in circles. The elephant is the emotional side of our brain, and the rider is the rational side. And I most definitely, well, they also said in this book that most people aren't very good evaluators. So anyway, I identify, I think, most with the rider, the rational side. At least that's the part I think I understand the best. The elephant is the emotional side, and I don't claim to be an expert on the elephant side. But anyway, what I want to do is I want to go to Romans 7. And we're going to talk about the elephant for a little bit. the book was just chock full of stories and all kinds of stuff that I'd really like to share with you, but there just isn't time. So I'd recommend read the book or listen to it like I did. That's kind of a neat way to do things too. Kind of hard to take notes while you're driving though. And I don't recommend it. I had to stop. And it worked out this week. I had a very slow week this week, so I was able to just sit and listen and take notes. Very dangerous otherwise. Anyway. Okay. Romans 7, 21 through 25. So I find this law at work. This is Paul. We talked about this in class. And we talked about another one of my scriptures in class too. So I hope this resonates. So I find this law at work. When I want to do good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner being, I delight in God's law. But I see another law at work in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a... All right. No, that doesn't help. Okay. I see another law at work in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin. Boy. Okay. Old age is creeping in there. All right. I'm going to start with 22 again. Now I'm going to start with 21 again. Let's just start over. So I find this law at work. When I want to do good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner being, I delight in God's law. But I see another law at work in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin. At work within my members, what a wretched man I am. Who will rescue me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Okay, I'm going to stop there. I need to do a little bit of explaining, I guess, here. I cut a story out, and now I remember why it was in there. There was a study done with some college kids. They were told to arrive at this lab. It was a taste test, they were told. They were supposed to arrive 3 hours after their last meal. And they come to the lab, and they've been making chocolate chip cookies. And so the whole lab just smelled of these hot chocolate chip cookies. And there was this table in the middle. Half the table had plates of these fresh chocolate chip cookies there. And the other half had plates of radishes. And they split the students in half. And half the students got to eat the chocolate chip cookies. And half the students got to eat the radishes. And they were told some reason about the contrasting tastes and the, you know, that they were being tricked is what they were being doing. But so they told them that the people doing the study were going to leave and they were to eat their food and then they would come back and be questioned about it. So the lab people left and they were watching them, of course, and the chocolate chip people ate their chocolate chip cookies and the people with the radishes ate their radishes. And none of them cheated. They were all good participants in the taste test. And so they come back and they answer a bunch of questions that aren't relative to what I'm talking about here. And they were told the study was over. And about that time, another group of technicians come in and says, "Oh, we're so glad you're still here. We're looking for another. We just need a set of students, and we're doing another study. And since you guys are here, why don't you help us out? We're doing a study to see who is better at solving problems, high school students or college students." See, a little bit of identity pride there going on. Of course, they said, "Well, of course the college students are better." And so they jump right in there, and they're all anxious to do this test. And they're given this geometrical shapes. I probably screwed that word up, but they're supposed to draw them on a piece of paper, but they can't lift a pencil up, and they have to draw several of these shapes, and they can't cross any of the lines. Well, it's designed. It's impossible to do this. And so they're all sitting there doing this drawing, and what they didn't really know was the study had just started. And the results were the radish eaters gave up. I didn't write it down. Okay, test my memory here. The radish eaters gave up in 8 minutes, and I forget the amount of attempts they had. But the cookie eaters gave up in 19 minutes. They gave it, it'd be twice as long. Well, the difference was the cookie eaters hadn't been using their self-control at all. They were just down in chocolate chip cookies left and right. The radish eaters had been sitting over there across from the cookie eaters eating their radishes and being very good. Their rider was forcing their elephant down the road, this new road, through the radish forest. They were forcing it through there. And then this new study comes in, and they're forcing their minds to try and draw these geometric shapes. And the elephant's just going, this is just too hard. I want to go back to the old rut. I want to go back to the dorm and eat something good. And so the radish eaters gave up in half the time as the cookie eaters. So self-control is an exhaustible resource. It is something that will run out. The rider cannot force the elephant to go where it should go all the time. And the elephant is big enough that it will get what it wants. Remember, the rider is long-term thinking. The elephant is short-term. It wants what it wants, and it wants it now. Okay, back to Romans 21:25. We see here Paul, his elephant is winning at this particular point in time. His elephant is saying, "No, this is too hard. You know, you've been beat. You've been floating in the ocean for way too long, and we're just tired of all this fighting, and we're not going to talk to those people because we're just tired. We need to take a nap." And so Paul's just not happy with, what's wrong with my elephant? It's not listening. It's not going where I want it to go. And so what a wretched man I am. I can't control my elephant. And so who's going to help me out? Well, as Christians, we have an extra dose of self-control. Jesus Christ has told us that, all right, here's extra helping. You are going to get this extra help. We're going to go to 1 Corinthians. This is all common stuff. 1 Corinthians 10. Where did he go? 1 Corinthians 10, verses 12 through 13. Oh! All right. One more tidbit. We're going back to Romans first, a second. How many of you have ever done, Drew and I do these things in Taekwondo, with heavy lay on your back and your feet are up in the air and you're waving your arms and your stomach is screaming. The muscles are about to fly to pieces and the instructor just keeps going on and on. He's talking about, come on, you can do this, stare at the ceiling, you know, go to your happy place and all this place. You know, there is no happy place left. And then he does something that helps. He goes, 10, 9, 8. And immediately, your elephant says, oh, there it is. There's the end. I can do this for just a little bit longer. And when you're just about ready to give up, your trainer says, all right, they're about ready to explode. They're about ready to explode. And then he pulls out this last trick, and he gets just that little bit more out of you. That's what Christ does for us. You're fighting your elephant. Fine, I'm going to get it. We're going to stay in this track. We're not going to give in. We're not going to give in. I'm not going to make it. And then Christ brings you reinforcements. And then you can control your elephant for just a little bit longer and make it. All right, now 1 Corinthians 10, 12 through 13 says, wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above what you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it." See, this has elephant and rider written all over it. "Wherefore let him who think he standeth take heed, lest he fall." My elephant is going exactly where I want it to go. This is going great. And then, left turn. And if you're not careful, the elephant goes left and the rider goes right. He takes that fall because he wasn't prepared for the turn. Then, verse 13 says, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such is common to man." This is going to happen. This is all part of the course. The rider can't control the elephant forever. It's going to happen. But God is faithful. He will not suffer you to be tempted above what is able. He gives you that last little bit of that extra helping of self-control. That extra bit. You can see that extra help. Now, in case everybody thinks the elephant is always a bad guy, the elephant isn't always a bad guy. I want to go to James 4, 17. James 4 and 17 says, "Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good, and doeth it not, to him it is sin." Now, what's this? This is here, you have the you have the rider. He's the navel gazer, remember? The data collector. He's always going, "Oh, before I ask for that Bible study, I gotta have more data. I gotta have more information. I gotta know more answers. The timing's not right. It's a bad time in their life. I'm not gonna ask them if they want to have a Bible study or yet." Let's see, I'm not thinking of more rationalizations right off the top of my head right now. But that the writer is great at that. He's great at, "Oh, I need more." They love spreadsheets and all this kind of stuff. And just the more information, the better. I can collect it and pull it in, and I'm getting bigger and better and stronger, but I'm not going anywhere. So the writer sometimes is the problem. He won't kick the elephant and get it going. Then we go to 1 Peter 3 and 15. 1 Peter 3 and 15. "But in your hearts set apart Christ as Lord, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope you have. But do this with gentleness and respect." Here's the test, I guess. Someone comes up to you and asks you, "Why are you always so happy?" I've had that happen to me, and I haven't given the right answer. Usually it caught me broadside, and I wasn't thinking about Jesus Christ is the reason for my happiness. I was like, I'm not sure. Usually my answer. So sometimes it's the elephant, sometimes it's the rider. Sometimes the elephant says, "Jesus Christ, he took my sins away, and I'm going to heaven. Wouldn't you be happy if you were doing that?" Yep. Then my writer's having a heart attack. Like, "Wait a minute. I don't have all the answers. They're going to ask questions after that answer. And that might be embarrassing." You know, and then it could go the other way. I didn't think of the scenario going the other way, where the elephant doesn't want to move, but the writer's trying to do something. So the ideal situation is when you have the writer and the elephant both go in the same direction. So that's why you have to direct the rider, and that's why you have to motivate the elephant. Directing the rider. Directing the rider is The writer is very analytical. So if you give him too many choices, he gets confused and won't do anything. He drives in circles. He's an Aldi shopper. He wants one choice of mustard, and the choices are very slim there. But Aldi's is also the biggest grocery store in the world. They're in Germany, all over the place. So they must know something. And that was also a story in the book. They had a place they put out seven. It was a special jam specialty store. They put out a table with seven samples. And people bought and bought and bought. They put out all 124 jam samples, and they hardly sold any. Because people were so overwhelmed with all the tastes, we'll buy some other day. So if you give somebody too many choices, they just spin their wheels, and they won't buy anything. So the writer is very probably narrow-minded, or that's probably not the right word, but he's simple. He needs a simple, singular, very pointed goal. And you know why? Because he's got to control that 3-ton beast he's riding, and that beast doesn't want to get out of the rut. And so if he's going to change something and do something new, he has to force that thing to do that. And so you have to have one very pointed goal, and we're going there. And so the rider controls it till there. And then the rut gets made, and the elephant starts following that rut. And then once you get that rut made, then you can go on to the next goal. And the rider has the self-control to control the elephant. All right. That's directing the rider. The rider, it has to be very... I've noticed that in my own life. I'll collect magazine articles. I rip them out of the magazine. Exercises, how to get fit, and all this stuff. I mean, I got files of exercise programs. And I don't do any of them. But if I get one exercise, which I've done recently, get one exercise, boy, that really helps. I just do one thing, and I can get that done. But you give me four or five, and I don't have time. I have to get up a half hour earlier. But if I just one, I can get it done. Okay. All right. Then motivating the elephant. This one is vague to me. The elephant's emotional side. And I'm not very good at my emotional side, I guess. I don't get real excited a lot. And so I'm still learning that. But anyway, that's where the work gets done. That's where you get excited about something. And that elephant goes through small trees and medium-sized trees. No problem. We're going through. If the elephant wants to go there, it goes there. My example that I thought of was the New Year's party. You take Ritz crackers, put peanut butter in between them, and dip them in chocolate. My elephant will be in the kitchen every once in a while, grabbing one of those. My rider's like, no. And 15 minutes later, I'm back in the kitchen. The elephant's snitching another one. And then my rider starts, all right, just one. They rationalize. The goal is to get something good where the rider... There's a meal at Latin King. I don't know if they still have it. It's been years now. But it was... There was artichokes and all kinds of different squash and vegetables. They were all kind of cooked with some kind of very good meat. It was all cut up, all cooked together, and that was good. My elephant and my rider could get over. They were headed both in the same direction for that. That was good. Somewhat nutritious. I'm assuming it was nutritious. My rider thought so. My elephant liked the taste. So we're good. All right. Lost my place here. Okay. So the elephant is the emotional side. That's your relationship with people. That's your concern for people. That's what gets your elephant going. The short-term stuff. Helping people. Mine's going blank. But it's that kind of stuff that gets the elephant fired up and going. And then the rider, hopefully, is getting that aimed in the right direction. And that's the one I need to learn the most about. Controlling, or getting the elephant motivated. Now, the shape the path, that's where the church really comes in. And I have very little time. But the church comes in here. This is very important. And if all of this is fine and dandy, if you can, the rider gets tired. I mean, he can't control that elephant for very long. And Jesus gives us this extra shot of self-control. That's very good. But eventually, you need more than just one elephant. You need a whole herd of elephants. Elephants run in herds. And that's where the church comes in. That's where you're shaping the path. You know, if you got a stubborn elephant and you got him on a ramp headed uphill, you're not going to get very far pushing, I don't know what an elephant weighs, but you're not going to get it to go up there. But if you can get it going downhill, put some grease on that thing, and then an electric prod behind the elephant, you're going to get some momentum going. The elephant is suddenly motivated to move. It's going to go somewhere. So that's called shaping the path. You know, we kind of been talking about this. This is what I put down. If it takes me 45 minutes to get to church, or it takes me 2 minutes to walk to church, that makes a big difference on if I'm here or not. You know, if it takes 40 minutes, I just barely get home, and I'm like, oh man, I haven't eaten, and I'm beat, and not feeling real good. I'm just gonna stay home. You know, but if I live right up here, like I do, then it's a whole lot easier. Like, I just walk down here. It's a lot easier. The motivation, that's shaping the path, getting things so that they're aimed in the right direction. I'm not aiming at anybody's living quarters or anything like that. I'm just saying that seemed like a good example to me. But it's just laying things aside, getting rid of that Victrola and the grandfather clock out of the back of the wagon is going to make getting up that mountain a whole lot easier. So shaping the path is getting there. And the church plays a big part in that. Because sometimes just getting here is the biggest part. Oh, I made it. I'm in the seat. And then the people around you can do their part. The singing lifts you up. The praying reminds you of better things. And by the time you leave, you're like, oh, I'm so glad I came. So glad I came. They lifted you up. And part of the book says shrinking the task. That means just make it as easy as possible to get the task done. Make that elephant think, oh, this isn't so bad. This is easy. I can do this. And get it moving. And then grow your people. I mean, shrink the task and pump your people up. Encourage them. Look for the bright spots. This was a bright spot for me. Riders don't focus on the bright spots. They're always like, all right, we're going off the road. Get back in line, you lazy lump of elephant, you know? And they're not saying, well, that was a really good 50 yards. You stayed right on the path and went right where I wanted you to go. And focus on the bright spots. There's a really good story I'm not going to tell you about Vietnam, and an American went over there and was able to help solve their malnutrition problem because he just watched what they did. He just saw what good things some of the people were doing, took their own solution, they just didn't know it was their own solution, and presented it to them, and they solved their own problem. And he focused on the bright spots, found what was going right, and focused on it. And that's not my nature. If your kid comes home with a report card with an A, 3 B's, and 1 F, what do you focus on? The F. You know, why in the world did you get an F? So, focus on the bright spots and grow your people. Pump people up. That's what we're here for. And create an expectation of failure. That was one of the points that I thought was really neat. Elephants hate to fail. As soon as they stub their toe, like, I'm done. Done. Well, is this not the best place to fail? And where in the world can you fail and you're not going to have supporting people around you that know, yep, I've done that. And we have orders. We are to forgive as we've been forgiven. And in Galatians 6:1, it says to restore one gently. I'm not going to go there. I'm past. But we need to... This is the best... We're going to fail. That's all there is to it. I turned away from it. 1 Corinthians says it's common to man. Common to man. We're going to fail. That's going to happen. That's why Jesus died on the cross. So that we can fix that. We can have those taken away. And then one other thing. They said practice is the key. Everything is hard before it is easy. I mean, how many of you have picked something you're going to do and you just went and did it and it was great? I mean, we're in Taekwondo. I know that. So how many white belts, right, Lucas? You didn't go in there and you weren't whooping up on Mr. Bond. No. Nope. It's a learning process. That's why there's belt levels. You just move up through them. You keep growing. The same as nothing's ever... I mean, occasionally you'll hear of somebody who just naturally does something, but that's pretty rare. Pretty rare. So practice is the key. And practice involves failure. And then you work backwards. And the people around you should pick you up, focus on what you did right, and encourage you, and shrink your task. He said, having babies is mind and life-changing. He says, and everybody volunteers for it. They jump right in. And they have no clue. Their writer has no knowledge how to raise kids, really. I mean, you have some experience, but not much. And so your mother comes over. She helps shape the path. She washes dishes and lets you get a little sleep and does things. And that's shaping the path and growing your people. Oh, you can do this. Not like you can back out much, but you can do this. And it will be all right. So that's my thoughts for this morning. That was kind of a... I would encourage everybody to read that book. Or listen to the tape. But I thought it was great. It applies. I see it now. I just see it everywhere I look. And it's just kind of neat. Because I thought I had some kind of something wrong with my head or something. And now I know. Oh, there's two parts. Didn't understand that before. And it makes me feel a lot better. So anyway, we'll offer the invitation this time. If there's anybody who wants to make themselves right with the church, wants to become a member of the church, wants to become a part of Christ's church, we'd be glad to help you if you'd come forward as we stand and sing the closing song.